Krishna. Good morning, everyone. So today's section in the Srimad Bhagavatam is a seventh chapter of the first canto, first section, verses 1 through 7. The section is titled as Srila Vyasadeva's Meditation and Samadhi in Burijan Prabhu's Overview. So we'll recite these introductory verses and then go into the sections.
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं उदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी.
So these verses, there were only very short verses, but they are very potent. There have been three sections in the outline, which I have highlighted here. First three verses describe Vyasadeva's meditation, what he did after he heard from Narada Muni. And second section describes Vyasadeva's realization, what he saw. Part of it is also in verse 6. And then third thing is, what did it do? So that's the sequence of these verses. And thank you. And Srila Radhanath Maharaj says in one lecture, whatever we do for Krishna, every time any service we do, it has to be something special. So for making my class special, I thought of outsourcing the reading of the verses to Navakishwari Mataji, because she's so good in doing it. Mm-hmm. It's like creates such a transcendental atmosphere in hearing these verses as it was spoken thousands of years back. So Mataji, you want to recite this? And we can follow.
शौनक उवाच निर्गते नारदे सूता
भगवान् बादरायणः
श्रुतवांस्तदभिप्रेतम्
Tata kim akarod vibho.
Rishi Saunaka asked, O Suta, the great and transcendentally powerful Vyasadev heard everything from Sri Narada Muni. So after Narada's departure, what did Vyasadev do? So as you remember the sequence from last few sections, so first Vyasadeva compiled all the literatures, but still he was despondent. He didn't know what the cause of his dissatisfaction was. And so at that time, Srila Narada Muni, his spiritual master, appeared and explained him how, even though he had composed all the Vedic literatures, he hadn't directly glorified Sri Krishna's transcendental pastimes. And that's why his dissatisfaction was. And he explained how the differences between the literature that describe Krishna and that don't describe Krishna are different in terms of their transcendental quality. So afterwards, Narada Muni, to inspire Vyasadeva, explained his own pastime of how by hearing and chanting the names of God, he himself got perfected. So after hearing that, then Narada Muni, then Vyasadeva, what did he do? So that's the question of the sages at this point. So, in other words, Mukund Prabhu says nicely, like, hearing that stops after the speaker stops is not hearing at all. Meaning you have to act on the thing that you have heard. So, they're asking, what did he do? Because Narada Muni gave several instructions to him. So, that's the beginning part of this section. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how... Actually, the whole chapter, seventh chapter, is called The Son of Drona Punished. Since these verses are not talking about the pastime yet, I haven't elaborated that part. Srila Prabhupada explains briefly the introduction in his purport and then says, how did Vyasadeva know all this? So he actually realized the whole truth through his meditation. He actually saw all the pastimes, and that is what actually the Bhagavatam is. In other words, he didn't make up any of these. It's not just a philosophy. It's actually what he saw in his realization. So it's like that's the spirit in which we have to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not like just a convincing, intellectually consistent philosophy, but it's actual truth. And the qualification for Vyasadeva to write the truth is that he actually realized the truth. And these first few verses are explaining how exactly it happened and what he realized in a nutshell form. And then the Bhagavatam expands all these pastimes in the upcoming verses.
Sutavacha
Brahmanadhyam Sarasvatyam
Ashrama Paschime Tate
Samya Prasa Iti Prokta
Rishinam Satravardhanah.
Shri Suta said, on the western bank of the river Saraswati, which is intimately related with the Vedas, there is a cottage for meditation at Shamyapras, which enlivens the transcendental activities of the sages. And we'll do the next verse and then go to the purports of both.
Tasmin sva ashrame vyaso
badari shanda mandite
asinopa upasprishya
pranidadyau manasvayam.
In that place, Srila Vyasadeva, in his own ashram, which was surrounded by berry trees, sat down to meditate after touching water for purification. So one question following in Balram Lila Prabhu's footsteps. So Vyasadeva was a householder. So why does it say in his own ashram?
You can't read from the purport, right? Prabhupada is giving the answer there.
Right, that's the next slide. But just some food for thought. Or in other words, Prabhupada is teaching us these are the questions you should be asking and be so attentive when you read these verses or translations. So, yeah, usually ashram is like for renounced people. That's our understanding. So Vyasadeva was a householder. So Prabhupada explains, whichever place where spiritual culture is a priority, that's ashram. So it doesn't have to be only in the renounced order of life. So the differences are only a matter of formality according to the strength of renunciation. So, I don't know how many of you have been to, probably most of you have been to Madhav Gauranga Prabhu and Shyamala Mataji's home. You get that feeling. So you understand what these verses mean. It's like every time you go, it's like exactly the same state. So, it's like I'm waiting. Yeah.
Which sloka are you going to be class? Like, you want the backside one or
everyone?
Like,
multiple.
You want, which sloka
are
you going to talk about?
No,
seven.
Only
seven.
We don't do one verse. We do seven verses, eight verses. Like
that. Oh, okay. So you don't do talk about only one verse?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a section. It's like seven.
Okay.
Because we are doing it as Bhakti web of course now. So we are going through the Bhagavatam sequence. So 7-8 verses karte ek baar. Or sometimes 10-15 verses.
I was thinking maybe you're going to be pastor. But how they can understand the philosophy than one sloka?
Yeah, that's a hard.
Read and do more work.
No, like if you talking about one sloka, you have to take out from purport main things.
Right,
they
right.
can understand that.
Hmm.
Otherwise, if you're reading all day, they can read at home also.
So
you're
giving realizations
on
the first three.
No, purport is not mean. You have to one subt, you can talk 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
But if one sloka is too much for talking about, so.
Yeah.
I'm not saying like, but
no.
I'm,
what you say is correct.
I
like
want to hear like something, and I want to hear this, but I want to hear more like one sloka main things. Then
yeah, the next one is like the next one and two are the main
yeah,
ones.
Main one.
Yeah.
Then you're going to talk about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Usually, what you say is a very important point.
Yeah.
Mukund bro always says, you know, our philosophy is expanding, not
yeah.
like condensing. Like whenever we ask him to give like verses
yeah.
on few things, he feels so uncomfortable. Like. Because
no, I'm
if you
just
look at,
asking because
yeah.
I don't know, maybe you're going like that.
No, no actually, what you say is, yeah.
About
but
the last one, then you can maybe manage this one to the last one.
But the sequence, no problem.
No?
Sequence is these come before and after that.
No, from before one, you can bring from there, you're reading now, so you can keep in your mind from there to fix in there.
Oh, okay.
So then you can create this one to there, fix
connect.
And give it nice.
Yeah, the next one is the like that. The next one is the main verse. Next one or two verses. Yeah, so this is an important point. Like householders in ashram, we shouldn't judge a person by their ashram. So, one personal example I would like to share was like several years back. Probably I don't know most of you at that time. This was like around 2000 or something, like 10 years back. We were having a class with His Grace Hari Vilas Prabhu at the University of Washington. I had taken some of my friends from my work to that place. So at the end of the class, there was some discussion and some of them agreed and decided. So it was like very new people. So some of them asked like, in some context about the soul and this thing, they were asking. So you, there was some argument kind of thing. So you asked like, so do you say Hari Vilas Prabhu is a self-realized person? Can you say that? Like he was challenging me. Can you say that he's a self-realized soul? So at that time I wanted to say yes. But I wasn't convinced myself. But I didn't want to say no, so I didn't answer either way. But I didn't realize about that at that time. But now I see how that was a big mistake. In not knowing how to recognize a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. So it's not the external appearance, because it's so easy to mistake him for an ordinary man. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's not his fault. It's actually my ignorance that I didn't know how to recognize that. Sometimes we say it out of formality, like external formality, that you know, we need to kind of defend, or it's not coming from the heart, but the reality is, I mean, the what this verse is that we should understand it from the heart, like that there is no difference, like, you know, that's what it means. That's a level of respect and honor we should offer for anybody that's a pure devotee. I mean, like, it took me like 10 years or something to recognize, to understand that, you know, he's a pure devotee. Now if somebody asks, I can clearly say yes. And I can defend that based on their, you know, Shastra and based on his activities and everything. But at that time, if somebody asked, I wouldn't have had that. I would have said yes externally just to keep the argument or to defend his con or anything. But what we have to understand is like, that's like the test for our faith. Whatever we study and hear, how really we are internalizing it and being able to it's not about convincing others, it's about convincing our own mind mainly. So that's one important point I thought I could share from this. So it's not like, so if it was some other Maharaj or somebody, it would have been easy for me to have told even if I hadn't known much about them. That's because of the external thing we you know, take it for granted. But the thing is, we shouldn't, like, because he's like so down to earth. So it's so easy to mistake such a person. So that's exactly their glory. because they are so down to earth and because they are in the grass ashram, they can mingle with so many people which sannyasis may not have access to, like in such an informal way, and that's their strength. So it's the heart that matters, not the external ashram. So we should really recognize these things based on that. So that's why even though Vyasadeva was a householder, his place of residence was called ashram, and he meditated there. And under Narada Muni's instruction, which is recapped here from the fifth chapter of this canto, think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of people in general from material bondage. So that's, he's following that instruction after the hearing about Narada Muni's story.
Bhakti yogena manasi samyaka pranihite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashrayam.
Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his external energy, which was under full control. So this is one of the very, very famous verses in this section. Actually, the next three verses, including this, the 4, 5, 6, they are considered to be the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, just like the Paribhashya Sutras are there. So these are the core parts of the philosophy. And the whole Bhagavatam is an expansion of the philosophy that's described in these verses. And this is very basic philosophy, so you all already know about this. So it's not something new. But it's very, very deep. To have an understanding of this is so critical. And in fact, those of us that came to Krishna consciousness by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, initially we won't know where is Prabhupada getting all that information from. Actually, and sometimes we may just see it as a philosophy, but actually they're all rooted on these three verses. Everything that Srila Prabhupada says in those, especially the introductory books, the fundamental relationship between the Lord and the living entity and the material energy and the material world, all this fundamental relationship, they're all contained in these three verses. So we'll go in detail, as Prabhuji wished, into these three verses. So in this verse, you can see the verse Purusham Purnam. So that's explained here. It said, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Pranihite Amale. So first line, the Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Pranihite Amale describes how Vyasadeva did his meditation. He fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking in devotional service without any tinge of materialism. That's a process. And the result he got was, he saw the absolute personality of Godhead. Apashyat Purusham Purnam. He saw the Purusha, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his completeness, Purnam. And he also saw one more thing, which is Mayam Chat Tat Apashrayam. He saw Maya taking shelter of him. So, when we say Purusham Purnam, Srila Jiva Goswami describes that this includes all the expansions of Krishna, all his energies, the internal, external, marginal energy, avatars, the whole spiritual world basically. So, and this complete realization can be obtained only by Bhakti Yoga. In other words, by meditation or some other process, you can even get the Brahman realization. But that's only a partial realization, partial picture of the Absolute Truth. But when we say Absolute Truth, it means a complete personality of Godhead, which includes all these aspects. So, it's like Krishna and his energies, everything together is also Krishna. That's the understanding, all his expansions, everything. there's Krishna and his energies, and the whole thing is also called Krishna. So it's not a separate existence. So there's only one thing, which is Krishna, and these are all the different aspects of Krishna. So mayam tad apashrayam, that's also a very important part of the verse. It says in Vyasadeva's meditation, he saw Maya taking shelter of Krishna. In other words, complete control. Krishna had complete control over Maya, and he saw that aspect of the Lord. So this is an important aspect of how Srila Prabhupada refutes the Mayavad philosophy, because Mayavadis say that the Supreme Lord himself is influenced by Maya, and he thinks himself as who he is not, and those are all us. In other words, we are the Lord. We are all thinking that we forgot that we are the Lord due to this Maya, and that's why we have separate identities. In other words, when that Maya goes away, then we all realize that we are all one, and then there is no difference. There is nothing else except us, that Brahman. So that's their theory. So in order for their theory to hold good, Maya should be superior to Brahman. Maya should be superior to Brahman in order for that to hold good. Right? But here, that's completely refuted. So here, it clearly... So this is why I said these are like very fundamental verses from which Srila Prabhupada grounds his philosophy on, because it's Vyasadeva's realization is that there's Maya. He saw Maya, but it was completely under the control of Krishna. So there is no question of Maya taking over Krishna.
What's the meaning of how can you read? Can you explain the visualization of Maya being under control of Krishna?
Yeah, Maya is also personality.
It's a personality.
Yeah. So, in fact, in another verse elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it says that Maya is ashamed to stand in front of Krishna. Actually, she is behind Krishna. That's the vision that Vyasadeva saw. So it's not even like in the front. And in another lecture, His Holiness Rompath Swami was mentioning how he connected this verse with the Yoga Maya Samavrita. Krishna says, I'm not manifest to the unintelligent and fools. I'm covered to them by my internal potency. So he says, I'm covered by my energy. So when Vyasadeva wanted to see it, he asked the energy to go to the side so that Vyasadeva could see his darshan. So it's like, so in other words, Maya has complete control, Krishna has complete control over Maya. So that's what it means here. He saw that aspect of the Absolute Truth. So in the Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he is covered by his own internal potency. So here Krishna is saying he asked the potency to move aside so that people could see him.
That is Yoga Maya.
Yes. So, yeah, he says that, but here this Maya is referred to as external energy.
Yeah.
But in that verse, he was connecting that. So I don't know why that's, because for Krishna it's the same like Yoga Maya. It's only for us it's different. For him, there's no difference between external and internal energy. It's how he uses. He didn't expand on that point, but he connected that how the Krishna's energy, he covers himself with that, and then when he wants, he can reveal that to people. So when Krishna says Yoga Maya, I'm not sure whether that's literally the other spiritual Maya that we talk about, because sometimes he also uses mystic potency. So and then here that's also Srila Prabhupada in the purport mentions how internal and external energies, the role is different. So Krishna, again, if from our viewpoint, it's different. So Krishna's internal energy or Yoga Maya is not separated from him, whereas the Maya is separate from him. That's another distinction. So the example he gives is the difference between moon and moonlight. So there is no difference. The moon, when you see the moon, you also see the moonlight. Whereas when you don't see the moon, you see the darkness. So moonlight is also energy of moon, and darkness is a separate energy. But when you see moon, you don't see darkness, but you see moonlight. So that's how the relationship between internal and external energy is defined. So in other words, here it doesn't explicitly say that Vasudev saw the internal energy. It just says he saw the complete absolute truth, which includes his internal energy. So the Lord and his internal energy, everything is included in the statement. And then it explicitly says that he also saw the external energy. Does that make sense? So, and devotional service is actually a function of internal energy, which means everything that happens in devotional energy is not happening by karma or by material nature. It's all directly happening under Krishna's personal supervision, under the guidance of his internal energy. Examples are like when we chant, it's not a mechanical process that's taking place in our body or at the physical level that's giving us the peace or the satisfaction. That's why many people get confused. No, I can chant Coca-Cola as good as Hare Krishna. They may think that is a sound pattern that matters. It's not. It's just a vibration. So they break. Basically, think of activities in devotion service down to that level, and think that could equally produce the same effect, because at a material level, at a vibration level, they may all be comparable. So here it says that's not like the fact, because bhakti, the rewards we get in bhakti are controlled by the internal energy, not by the external energy. So chanting is not producing just because it's a mechanical activity, but because it's directly under the control of internal energy, we get that love for Krishna by chanting. So, in other words, these are all the different aspects of absolute truth, and this verse establishes the relationship between these. What is internal energy? What is God? What is external energy? What the differences are? And external energy is completely under control. So these are our core philosophy. And we'll go to the next verse.
Yaya sammohito jiva.
Atmanam
trigunatmakam.
Paropi
manute nartham. Tatkritam chabi padyate.
What time is? Yeah. Can I get that one? Thank you. 10:41. 5 minutes fast. Okay. Yeah. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So, this is another classic verse and purport. So here, in fact, Srila Prabhupada explains why he says this Maya that's referred in the previous verse. Because it just says Maya Chatapashrayam. So how do you say it's external or internal energy? You could interpret it either way. So Prabhupada says the function of this Maya is described in the next verse. Because of that, we know what energy it is. So here it says Yaya, meaning by whom or by that Maya, Sammohito Jiva. The Jivas are completely bewildered. And due to that bewilderment, so paropi, even though they are transcendental, they think like manute, atmanam, their self, as trigunatmakam, as the product of the modes of material nature, formed by the three modes of material nature. So that's what they think as. And tatkritam means they undergo their reactions. Kritam refers to the reactions of the living entity, and sha abhipatyate means they undergo the material miseries because of this false consciousness. So this is like such a core aspect of our philosophy, as it explains how the living entities are bewildered by illusion. In the previous verse we said Maya cannot influence the Lord, but here it says how Maya can influence the Jiva. So that's why Maya, the soul, individual souls and Supreme Lord are different. This also again refutes the Mayavad philosophy in the other aspect, which where they equate the living entity to the God. So if that happens, then why is it saying the living entities are bewildered by Maya? So this clearly establishes the difference between the living entity and Supreme Lord. So one is completely the controller, another is the controlled. One cannot come under illusion, the other can come under illusion. And their function is very, very separate. And the Lord is in charge of both. So there is no ambiguity here. Yeah.
So Prabhu, they might, Mayavadis might refute that they are saying living entity, but then it means Lord is also living entity. So they are not distinguishing here between Jiva and the Lord. So how we can counter argue on this?
No, Jiva usually refers to the living entity, right?
Okay.
And the previous verse is
no,
Purusham Purnam. Previous verse is Purusham Purnam.
Purusham is
the Lord. So the Lord is the Lord.
Yeah.
Purusham is like something.
Purusha, yeah. So this is a.
Purusha is the Supreme.
Yeah. But also in Bhagavad Gita, if you say Purusha is the Supreme Lord,
So like sometimes Atma can be referred to, you know, Lord. So here it's very explicit because it says Jiva. Jiva is like never confused with Supreme Lord. So it says due to this external energy, living entity, although transcendental. So that's the key here. It's actually the original nature of the living entity is complete, which means blissful, and the other explanations that Rasika gave in her class, freed from the three modes and freed from, what is the other one?
Reactions of
fruity active. So that's the real thing. Whereas here it says, he's beyond those, he actually undergoes those simply because of this false consciousness. And this is one of the very, very, very condensed purport. Bhashyada Prabhupada explains the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That's Prabhupada's potency. Like, in the whole philosophy of Krishna, he just packs it into one verse, one purport. So I've tried to just highlight the progression of the purport. Like when I first read the purport, I just felt it, oh, it's a long purport. That's how much I undertook. I grasped. And then, that's why giving the class forces you to really read it. Because you have to explain, so you force him to read. And then you can see really how Prabhupada is structuring his purport and how all these aspects are so nicely presented and connected. So, in this verse, the four topics that are explained actually are the root cause of suffering of the living beings and the solution for removing the suffering and how Krishna actually implements his solution and what the ultimate perfection we gain. So it's actually an injustice to not read the purport and just go with this, but I'll try to elaborate the high level so they can appreciate the purport, and I'll go through the purport after we discuss this slide. So the root cause of suffering is the perverted and unnatural thinking, feeling and willing of the living entity. So in other words, it says perverted because we have an original way of thinking, feeling and willing, which is our spiritual nature in the spiritual world. But somehow or other, we have come under this illusion and we have developed this unnatural way of thinking. It's actually, in another purport, Srila Prabhupada calls this as a complexity. So we have developed this complexity and that's why we are suffering. In fact, that's why there is a need for this material world, because Krishna provides this as a way to fulfill that complexity or that unnatural way. So one very important point here is, earlier we saw how the absolute truth is fully explained, and we have a constitutional position or a role in that whole picture. Somehow or other, that's the natural position, right? Somehow or other, if you don't want that position, it cannot be, right? It cannot be a fact, because that is the fact. That original position is the fact. It is a reality. There is no choice. But if you don't want that, if you want another reality, by definition, that has to be an illusion. Why? Because there is only one reality, one truth, that's absolute truth. The only sane choice is to accept that truth. But if you don't want to accept the truth and we want to have our own version of the truth or our own version of the reality, by definition, it can only be an illusion. Because reality, by definition, is one, which is absolute truth. Anything that's not part of the absolute truth has to be, by definition, maya or illusion. So, which is why there is a need for this external energy and the need for this world. So that's why living entities are taking birth here. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's explained, Icha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantapa. So same word used, Sammoha. Because of that bewilderment, living entities are put into this material world just to experience this unnatural, perverted reflection of the original nature of the living entity. So it's very, very unfortunate that we have, you know, made this choice to experience this reality. But now it seems so natural and so, you know, so much us. But actually this is completely not us. This is completely unnatural and foreign to us. But the original, we have an original identity, we have original service for the Lord. Everything we have forgotten completely, and we are stuck here. So that's like, So all the other problems that we have are arising from this false consciousness, because there's no other problem. Actually, there's no problem. The only problem is our consciousness. We want to have this experience, which is what's causing it. So the only way to get... in other words, if you are trying to solve problems in this consciousness, there's no solution. So the only solution is to surrender and give up this unnatural thinking, and then just accept the reality and accept the fact that we are servant of Krishna and engage in that original spiritual position. So there is no other solution that will work, because that's not the reality. So it cannot be sustained. Even if it may temporarily work in the illusory atmosphere, it will be, that illusion will be broken down. So, but here is a complexity. The solution is exactly opposite to what we want. We want this illusion. We want to be in this unnatural, perverted way. But solution is exactly opposite. Give that up. So it's like trying to teach a kid, right? Like the kid has a desire, like, you know, I want to watch TV. Don't watch TV. It's completely opposite. The parents' need and the child's need. So how do you deal with it? So it's exactly the opposite. So there's no compromise there. So that's Krishna's position, where he loves us and he has a plan for us. That's the original plan, original spiritual world. But we want to not accept that, and we want our own reality. So he creates this material illusion just for fulfilling that reality, so-called reality, and presenting that illusion to us as a reality. So in one sense, it's a virtual reality. So that's one nice book by Sadaputta Prabhu. He says, I think it's titled Maya, and then subtitle is The World as a Virtual Reality. So in other words, we see virtual reality in Kinect and other products, but he says the world itself is such a virtual reality. And so the whole book explains that philosophy. So Krishna arranges us to fulfill that so-called desire here, but at the same time, he makes sure that we come out of it gradually. So that's why the material world is constructed by design in such a way that you get frustrated. So it's not by mistake when people say, you know, why this thing happens, why that thing happens. It's not by mistake. It's by design that we get frustrated. So elsewhere it said, no, intelligent person should give up this process of finding happiness in this world, because you cannot get anything useful in this world. Even if you get it, it will be lost after some time. So there is no really point in striving for permanent happiness and permanent position here. So that's the way Lord deals with the situation, by giving us the illusion, but by giving it in such a way that we cannot be fully satisfied with it, because it's not that he has a choice that we can be satisfied. We cannot be satisfied with it because it's illusion, because there's only one way in which we can be satisfied, that's by serving the Lord in our constitutional position. So in the Bhagavad Gita, he explains how lust is completely insatiable. So we cannot satisfy that lust. It's not that we can satisfy, but the Lord is not giving us. If that were true, right, we could have some issue with the Lord. But the reality is that it cannot be satisfied, because our desires are so perverted that it's completely, it cannot be satisfied. So though it can be satisfied only in illusory atmosphere, and that even that we are only trying to satisfy. We can never satisfy it. So, you see what I mean? Like it's absolute truth. If you want anything else, that's not going to happen. So Krishna is just giving us a chance to experiment, see if it happens. So it's not going to happen, that satisfaction. That's why all these Bhagavatam verses are talking about yayatma suprasidati, yenatma suprasidati, because that satisfaction is ultimately what we are hankering for, but we are hankering for in that false consciousness. Because of which, in other words, these verses are so fundamental that they explain how by design you cannot get that satisfaction, because it's on the illusory consciousness. It's not the reality, and it cannot be the reality. So you cannot have, but the thing is, the original hankering is reality. The real hankering for satisfaction is real, but the way we want to have it is unreal, which is why we cannot find it in this world. And so in order to help us understand that once again, that's why Krishna creates this world and uses Maya as his agent to train us. So Prabhupada gives the example as how make a son obedient, father sometimes put under the care of some other agent, because father loves the child, he cannot directly do it, but he will have hire somebody else to do it. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada himself, we saw in the Abhay Charan how his mom would have this Damodar Prabhu take him to school, because parents are so close, they won't listen to them because they are familiar, but they'll be more afraid with some third person. So like that, so Krishna uses that trick, and so Maya takes that thankless task on behalf of Krishna. So Maya's agent that gives us that punishment. So it's a very intricate situation where Krishna wants us to rectify, but he doesn't directly interfere with that, with us. So he gives this thing, but tells Maya, okay, take care of this person, and then Maya takes charge now. And then that's how in the Bhagavad Gita elsewhere it says verses like, Nadate kashyatit papam nachaiva sukritam vibhulai. The Supreme Lord is not responsible for the pious and impious action of the living entity. They are all produced by his own, actions. So how does those verses hold good if Krishna himself is putting us in illusion? So Krishna is not putting us in illusion. Krishna is providing this energy which puts us in illusion. So Krishna is neutral. So he does. It's not that he desires us to be in illusion. We want to be in illusion, so Krishna creates a facility. And whatever good and bad happen, Krishna is not responsible for the results, because he creates the rules. He creates the parameters within which we can play the game. So he has complete control in that sense over what our outcomes can be. But he doesn't decide the particular outcome we choose. That we choose according to our own karma. So he gives this complete system. And Maya is the headmaster of this school of hard knocks, as Mukunda Prabhu says. So this is the situation. So you can see how it's so complete. The philosophy is so complete in just one or two verses. The whole Krishna consciousness philosophy, with the relationship between Maya, Krishna, Jiva, material world, how things happen, why bad things happen to good people. All these things are answered in just these two verses. This is the root of all these aspects of our philosophy. And so this is part one of Krishna's solution. You first realize that you cannot be permanently happy here. And when we realize that, and then we realize that to surrender is the only way we can actually get happiness, then Krishna offers all the help to get us back. So that's the second part of his solution, which is as spiritual master, he helps us. And that spiritual master is in also two forms. One is as Paramatma in our heart. He helps us understand him, but we are so dull that we can't listen to the Paramatma. So he also manifests himself as externally as the initiating spiritual master and the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, so many scriptures, and the Vaishnavas. So that's how complete and kind Krishna is. So he has given us a complete system, he has given us a complete choice. Whenever we are ready, we can take up the process of going back. So it's basically completely in our court. Ball is in our court. So it's not like Krishna is not partial. Krishna is not cruel. So we cannot blame Krishna. It's completely, he has done everything from his side. And so that's how Krishna's system works. So we just have to surrender to the system and then take advantage of it. Yes, Prabhu?
Question can I ask later?
Sure.
Later,
okay. So, and then the... yeah. Ultimate perfection, this verse also explains what is that. So basically it is to revive our natural love and affection for the Lord. So we are all trying to become perfect in so many things, but the real perfection is to revive this natural affection, which is the opposite of what we are here for, giving up this unnatural thinking and feeling. So it's 11, right? 10:55?
Started 10 minutes late.
10 minutes. Okay, so probably we'll come back to the purport. Why don't you please complete this class by reading the purport on your own, because we won't have time, because there are other verses also, very important verses. So this purport is so packed with this flow of the intricacy of Lord and energy and how everything is explained in this one purport.
Are you going to project
that properly? No, you can read it later on. I thought of reading it, but I don't think we'll have time for that. And so this is another famous verse, Mataji.
Anartho pashamam sakshad
bhakti yogam adokshaje
lokasya janato vidvans
chakre satvata samhitam.
Just from the Sanskrit you can say it's so special, right? Yeah, it's a, each word of this it's so deep and dense. It's just, as Prabhuji said, right, it's a great...
No, you can go a little more, Prabhuji.
No, what I'm saying is, like, just like you said, it's an injustice to pack all this in one class. So, but for the purpose of the course, we have to do that, but at least this will create us
That much is okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I was thinking before, maybe you're going really faster.
Okay. Okay, so yeah, please read this. This class is to create the impetus to read these verses. So that's when we'll do full justice. So the verse says, the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this. And therefore, the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the supreme truth. So one of the questions that were previously was, what was the inspiration with which Vyasadeva undertook this great work, because 18,000 verses. So why did he do that? Like what motivated him to do that? So this verse explains. So this is the conclusion of his realizations of within these three verses, is that he not only saw the Lord and the external energy and the living entity and how they are conditioned. He also saw how they are actually suffering because of their conditioning and how they can actually get back. So this is a complete picture. That's why it said Purusham Purnam in that verse. It's a complete absolute truth. So there is no, it's like a, even if you like want to look at a city, you look at it from a, you know, like a 10,000 feet high. You can see all the aspects of the city. Okay, so here's the water department, here's the fire department. Okay, you can get a full picture of the city. Okay, now what is that? Oh, that's a prison, right? So that's the prison we are in. So Vyasadeva got that complete realization from his meditation. So that's why he composed this, because he understood the full picture. Or in other words, this is not like a partial picture that somebody is, you know, favoring one thing as a party kind of thing. It's a complete picture. A person that knows a complete picture, like if you want to know what it means to be self-realized, or if you want to have option to talk to somebody, tell me about all your realizations. If they tell all their realizations, what will that be? So this is what that will be. They're giving the complete truth of this world and the spiritual world. So the material miseries, Prabhupada's language is so beautiful. He translates anartha as the miseries that are superfluous. In other words, these are unwanted miseries. So he translates that as these are material miseries that are superfluous.
What does the word exactly mean? Unwanted?
So superfluous means redundant. It's not necessary. So it translates anartha as so nicely. Yeah. It's like you don't really need all these things, but actually these are causing suffering to us. So he explains the material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him. And upashama means like they can be mitigated, directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. Bhakti yoga adokshaji. So we have heard that phrase earlier. But the mass of people do not know this. Lokasya ajanata. And then for that purpose, Vidwan, which is Vyasadev, compiled this Vedic literature, Shakre Satvata Samhita. So it describes Bhagavatam as Satvata Samhita. We have heard Bhagavan Satvatam Pati, so benefactor of the devotees. So here Satvata is in relationship with that supreme truth. So Bhagavatam is very poetically described here as Satvata Samhita.
Guruji Prabhu, when the mother read the sloka, maybe you have to check if there is, because here in the class, student, we learning from you, right? So when we completely learn from here, then we can go out. So can you read again the sloka, Mataji?
Anartopasamam sakshad. Bhakti yogam adokshaje.
Okay, so you read this line, bhakti yogam, then you said again madhokshaje.
I didn't say double time.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's fine. So one of the important points that Srila Prabhupada expands in his lectures is what are these anarthas? So the anarthas referred here are the sufferings of the living being, and where do these suffering come from? So Prabhupada says the body itself is anartha. It's not that we have anarthas, it's like the body itself is anartha. If you understand that, actually it's like that's Prabhupada's realization, because he's on the platform of the soul. So he can see the body as anartha. We don't see body as anartha, right? We think that we are the body, even though we know that we are the soul, but our operative consciousness is that we are the body, and what else is anartha? But Prabhupada says the body itself is anartha.
And Nicholas, so, once they said in the class, in Ayurveda it's also said that the body itself is a problem. It starts with that.
Exactly.
Yes. It starts with the body is a problem.
That's the same spirit in which Prabhupada explained that thing. So suffering. So I was thinking, he was explaining about some other suffering. He said, your body itself is a suffering. So that was that's why in this verse, Krishna is also, Vyasadeva is also saying the same thing. The all the sufferings are arising from the body. The body itself is a suffering. So it's not that the body is good, but others are suffering. If you think about it, it's like right now we have this body. If we had to do a drama or a thing, we put some costume and you know, so many other extra things. We'll be waiting. When should I? When will I take it out? You know, after the drama or something. If you put some other address. So, from a person that's self-realized, this body is such a baggage. It's like a complete, you know, baggage. They have to take care and maintain, and you know, that's how they see it as. Oh, I have to feed this thing every, you know, 4 hours, and it has to take rest, and it's like a dragging a big baggage with you all everywhere you go. That's completely, you know, redundant. So this is an important realization, because most people, as he says, lokasya janato, everybody in this world thinks that we can be happy only with the body, and then all their plans start with the body. Right? Like if you ask any philanthropist or anybody that's giving charity, they're all pretty much starting from the body and seeing how to maintain that and how to achieve peace and how to, you know, prolong our life here and all these aspects. But Bhagavatam is completely starting from the spiritual platform. It says this body itself is anartha, and because of which you have all this suffering. So that can all be mitigated only by devotional service to Krishna. So similarly, the mind. So, and people who are a little bit more advanced than the body, they think we are the mind. But actually, mind is also redundant. We don't need the mind. The soul can exist fully by itself without a body or a mind in this world. So soul is fully equipped to live completely on its own. And same thing with the world, the universe. This whole thing is actually redundant. In one conversation, devotee was asking, so what is the need for this world? Prabhupada said, no, there is no need for this world. So and elsewhere, Prabhupada also says, Prabhupada, if everybody goes back to Godhead, the world will be vacant. Yes, that's the point. So basically, we don't need this world. So all the environmentalists and all the ecologists and all these people, whatever they are trying to preserve, nothing is required really. So that's the platform in which Bhagavatam is giving solutions. It's not trying to solve these petty problems of this world and, you know, atmosphere and pollution and these kind of things. But it's completely saying, you know, the whole world is anartha. You don't need this world to be happy, and go out, get out of this world. So similarly, because the Vedic literature are so broad, they also give us how to live in this world. It's not that because of this they completely eliminate all purpose of this world. So the world has utility, but that utility has to be kept in the context, which is what we discussed in the previous verse. It is to get out of this world and to keep our life simple enough such that we can get out of it. So in that sense, a materialist person may see possessions and their work and, you know, who they are and what they do and all these things as artha, or things that are required for, you know, living and thing. But for devotees, those are anarthas, because unless you dovetail it for Krishna service or use it for Krishna, all these things are actually causing more suffering. So an intelligent person, as mentioned earlier in the Bhagavatam, is dharmasya ahyapavargasya nartho arthayopakalpate. So one should not use material gain for sense gratification.
The disciples of His Holiness Patrikas Maharaj went and told him, Maharaj, I bought this piece of land. He thought Maharaj will be very happy. Maharaj said, good, now give it to ISKCON.
Yeah, that's because these are all
possessions are anarthas.
Yeah. So we think these are all required, but actually it's not. So one who is Krishna conscious, if he makes that call, that's a sign of their Krishna consciousness. So we have now Kishori Mataji here, who was having such a nice job at Microsoft. So how many people leave their jobs at Microsoft, right? So, but to take that step, to practice Krishna consciousness, to get that time, that's the application of these points. Yes, it's redundant, I don't know. Balram Leela is a rich man, why should I work? So, that's consciousness.
The point is, all glories to Balram Leela Prabhu for inspiring in that way.
Right. So,
next point.
Yeah, unless it's utilized for Krishna, all these things are actually anartha. Because of that, sometimes people, you know, work so hard and then they don't have time for the chanting, and then, you know, then if you really look at your life, why do you know you have to work so hard? Why do you have to do all this? So we have to reconcile these with the, you know, information given in these verses.
Next time is Govind Chaitanya. Mataji can
That's why I said Balram Leela is a rich man. That doesn't apply for me.
Or Prabhu can leave it.
That was my plan before I met my spiritual masters. So yeah, it was like a big plan.
Oh, you were actually planning?
Long time back. That's why Krishna sent the spiritual master to fix me up. As I said, right, like a mind and everything. It's also crazy. And then the Madhurya Kadambini, as most of you may remember, it also describes four types of anarthas in more scientific detail. Anarthas arising from past sins and from past pious work, punya. And anarthas arising from offenses. And most surprisingly, anarthas arising from bhakti. So how can there be anarthas from bhakti?
Pride.
Yeah. Basically, these are the bhakti is so auspicious. So naturally, when you perform bhakti, even if you don't ask for material things, it will produce all the opulences, because Krishna is full of opulence and bhakti attracts these things. So you get opulences, name, fame, money, wealth, all these things. So if you are not pure in our consciousness, by performing bhakti, you'll have more opulence, and that's more of a distraction than if you didn't perform bhakti. So one has to utilize. So that's why that verse says, "Arthasya dharma ekantasya kamo labahir." So even if material gain comes, even if you didn't look for it, you should utilize that gain also in Krishna's service.
Which verse is that?
12 or something.
This is
a Rumbal Maharaj,
it is his favorite verse.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Yes, yeah. Nartho artha yopakalpate, nartha siddharma kantase, kamo labaya hismrita. So I'll give you the right after. So these are anarthas arising from bhakti. Like we get respect, we get, you know, somebody may say, Prabhu, you sang nicely.
Or, 1, 2, 9.
You know, you gave a nice class. So then we think, I'm great. Before the class, we would have been very humble. So after that class, we think we are good. So really, we must have done something. Maybe we are thinking too low of ourselves. And then the pride happens because of that. So it's like, that's the anatta from the bhakti. So we have to consciously be aware of these things and then get rid of those. So in this verse, the emphasis is on the hearing and chanting. How? By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can get rid of all these anarthas and chanting Krishna's names. So it's not that these are required, but because we have got this material disease thinking that it's required, now we have to overcome the disease. That is by focusing on the hearing and chanting. And Prabhupada clarifies that this is not a mechanical process of hearing and chanting, because only if the Lord's mercy is there, the Lord is pleased, that's when the process works. So it's a very personal process, not like it's not a mechanical external activity, which is why we have to really focus on our consciousness and our motives regularly when we perform devotional service. You know, what am I doing it for? What is my goal? Sometimes we don't understand these motives immediately. We think it's spiritual, but like I've had so many experiences, especially now Krishna is so merciful, he's showing me so much more of these. Like years back, you know, you might have done something, but in some consciousness you don't even know what you did with, but Krishna is showing this is the consciousness in which you did that. So it's so humbling when you know you thought you are doing something as a devotional service, but actually it was not motivated properly. So we should constantly look for that and improve ourselves. And here it says lokasya janato, so people don't know these things, so we have to educate this world. So Vyasadeva's preaching is through writing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is why Srila Prabhupada emphasized on printing and selling the Srimad Bhagavatam and distributing all the other books based on this philosophy so much. And you know, he has completely fulfilled this instruction of Vyasadeva by doing it in such a grand way. And this is the last verse of this section.
Yasyam vaishuyamanayam
Krishne parama puruṣe
bhaktir utpadyate pumsah
shoka moha bhayapaha.
Simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion and fearfulness. So this is a very, very beautiful purport too. And one very nice thing Prabhupada mentions in this purport. So look at the definition of love. Usually we say love applies only to Krishna. Right? The word love cannot apply to any other living being. It can apply only to Krishna. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So usually whatever we call as love in this material world is actually lust. Mm-hmm. But actually the real meaning of love is can be applied only to Krishna. Here Prabhupada tells the reverse. Meaning the only word to properly describe relationship of Krishna and Jiva is love. First I thought that was the point he was making because it was so close. And then if I read it again, he says, no, this is the only word to properly describe the relationship between Krishna and Jiva. See how deep it is? So, in other words, everything that Lord and we have in common is love. So, there is nothing but love in his complete dealings. So, that's why this material world is also, even though it's such a miserable and temporary place, it's also created out of love. Because we've had this unperverted feeling. Krishna is so merciful that he doesn't put us in a dungeon and then says, that's it, you are done for your life. So he gives us an illusion. So in other words, we have so many anarthas in our heart, but Krishna is so merciful that he is covering up all of it. Like, because as Paramatma, he knows everything. He knows think about if everybody knew what we thought in our mind, right? When somebody comes to our home, or when we go to somebody's place, right? Or when we do something together, we have so many things going on in our mind. Right, we would be too ashamed to tell the other person even that, this is what I'm thinking about you. But the thing is, that's what Krishna is perceiving in our hearts, and he keeps all of our data very confidential, such that we can have a meaningful relationship and we can have the so-called enjoyment. But in reality, the original thing we talked about, how perverted our feelings are, that's who we really are, or in other words, that's who we really are in this world. But Krishna is so merciful that he is giving us this illusion and giving us, so-called enjoyment, in spite of us being so fallen and, so selfish and so much, proud and all these things. He's covering it up and giving us that. So, in other words, everything he does is out of love, and everything he does is actually his mercy. So, in one lecture that we recently heard, Solinas Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning how, Solinas Rompal Maharaj was mentioning how, even when a devotee falls down, that's also actually Krishna's mercy upon him. That's very unusual to hear, right? Like we usually say Krishna protects a devotee from falling down. But the reality is that that's what he does. But if we are not sincere and if we are, holding on to our material attachments and we are, deviating from the path, in order to teach us, Krishna temporarily makes us fall down so that we realize and get back. So he gives that kind of punishment at the right time. So it's not like he knows when to do what. So in other words, the life of a devotee is completely controlled by Krishna and not by their karma. So even if a materialist, they may go through karma, but the devotee may also go through their karma. That's the point Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning in a lecture yesterday we heard. The reactions may even be from their karma, but in one case, it's happening completely under material energy. In other case, it's happening under Krishna's supervision. So he knows when to give how much dosage of a devotee's remaining karma in such a way that he can come back to devotional life. Yeah. So it's very. These are all very deep realizations we hear from such advanced souls, because they know how Krishna works. We don't know, right? Like we just think we want Krishna to reciprocate with us in a certain way, but they know how Krishna works. So we may think, why is Krishna doing that? Why is Krishna not doing this? We may have all these things, but they know how Krishna works. So when we hear from them, it helps us understand when we go through so much in our life. It helps us keep the proper perspective. In one lecture we heard Radhanath Maharaj was mentioning how sometimes we may even lose our service if we are not following up to Krishna's standards. So Krishna may, you know, initially be merciful, but then he would want us to grow in our Krishna consciousness, and we should do the reciprocation. If we don't do, the only way he can teach us is by, you know, taking away the service. So sometimes we may see, we may not have a service, but then that's also Krishna's mercy. But the main thing is to realize that that's happening to us and get back. Yeah, and another point Maharaj mentioned in the lecture is it's even worse. It's one thing to lose the service, but even worse is losing the service attitude. Mm-hmm. Even if you lose the service, right, you can have the service attitude. But if you lose the attitude, it's so hard to get back that. So we should be very careful with how we, you know, perform our services and how we reciprocate with Krishna's love. So it's not granted. So Krishna expects some reciprocation from us. That's for our own benefit. But we need to, in other words, we need to become more responsible for Krishna's relationship and be more accountable to all the mercy that he has given to us. So that's part of our growing up. Another point Prabhupada mentioned in the purport is peace. So people have these political conferences and peace conferences in order to bring up peace for the nations. But they're all grounded on this illusory platform of the body, and they're all trying to, you know, get their own share of things for their enjoyment. So Prabhupada very emphatically says none of them will help. So actually, if not for Prabhupada, we would be thinking, you know, all these things are actually helping the world. We'll be in that complete illusion that, oh, this conference happened, that conference happened, now the world is going to become a better place, and we'll be in that complete illusion. But Prabhupada is completely defeating that. It's not even, he's giving a chance that maybe they'll succeed. Says those things cannot help at all, because they're all grounded on this illusory consciousness. Until you remove that illusion, and because people have so much of these false expectations that to have to satisfy in this world, none of them is going to work because of this illusory atmosphere. And so they're always in lamentation, because whatever they want doesn't happen, or if it happens, it gets lost. So unless you change that original, unless you change the false consciousness to the original consciousness, none of your solutions are going to work. So Prabhupada emphasizes that, and which is why Srimad Bhagavatam is helping us get that consciousness. So in other words, you can see how foundational the Srimad Bhagavatam is to a civilization and to a devotee's life. It's not like a nice to have thing that we are. So the entire philosophy is grounded on these points, that we are in false consciousness now. Unless we change the quality of our consciousness and become Krishna conscious, none of our plans and hopes will work. So that's why it's so important to develop that love for Krishna. That's a perfection. But now we don't have that love for Krishna. So how do we, what do we do? So when we have love for Krishna, we'll be so inclined to hear about him. Just like, we hear about like Vrindavan or Radha's activities. You know, what did they do? Like we go and ask them, Aryan, or, today actually I was waiting for Aryan's question, because he's such an expert in Maya. Like he asked questions in Maya, we would be wondering, how is he asking these questions, like to Rompal Maharaj classes, right? Oh my God, this class is all about Maya, so I have to be careful, really prepared for Aryan, I was thinking. So we relish the activities of the kids, and we like to hear what did they say, what is Arla's supposed answer was, and we hear Hari's answer. So we relish all these things to hear about people we love. So Krishna is like that. So his activities are so relishable, but because we don't have love for him, we are not able to relish those. But the Bhagavatam and the Krishna's activities are so beautiful that if you have love, you'll relish it. If you relish it, or if you try to relish it, you will get love. So it works the reverse way also. That's why we are reading the Bhagavatam, so that we get attraction for Krishna. It's not that we have attraction, but they are like a mutual. So that's the sadhana bhakti. We don't have love for Krishna, but if we do the activities that please Krishna, we'll develop love for Krishna, which is the ultimate perfection. So unless we are on that platform, none of the material arrangements and anything in this world is going to help us really in our satisfaction. So that goes along with the theme of the Bhagavatam, where Yayatma Suprasidati. So this is the only one that can bring complete satisfaction, which is why Vyasadeva took so much effort to write this literature. And one other point Srila Prabhupada mentions, Shruta Kirti Prabhu also mentioned it in his class, when his wife, she passed away, before that she used to always emphasize this point, that Krishna loves us so much, otherwise he wouldn't take, so much trouble to get us back. So I was thinking that was her realization, and I found that that was exactly a verse from this purport. Prabhupada says, the Lord is the relation between the Lord is eternal and transcendental, because otherwise he wouldn't take so much trouble, so much, he wouldn't make such an elaborate arrangement to get us back. If you look at all this philosophy and the words and the entire material world, you know, like so many layers of false ego and earth, water, air, fire, ether, everything, so such a big arrangement, and within that so much, you know, psychology, philosophy, politics, so many types of, you know, activities and things happening. It's such a big elaborate arrangement. God is giving us this illusion, right? Why? To get us back. So in other words, he loves us so much that he creates this complete illusion, but he has taken so much trouble to create the scriptures and saints and spiritual master and all this entire mechanism and entire system. That's because he loves us. He doesn't just give us up because we are, you know, not reciprocative with him. So that's a very nice realization that Mataji was sharing, so which I was very happy to see that it was here. So to conclude, this is the conclusion of this section and the last purport. Srila Prabhupada says, simply by hearing the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, one can have direct connection with the Supreme Personality of God, Shri Krishna, and thereby one can attain the highest perfection of life by transcending worldly miseries, illusion and fearfulness. These are practical tests for one who has actually given a submissive hearing to the readings of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we don't have to be certified necessarily by the Bhakti Vaibhav exam. That's a means to get us here. But the real essence is how much we are practically freed from these things. So that's what we need to watch out for. And yeah, this is just summarizing the points that we discussed. These are the references. So thank you very much for patiently hearing. And